Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Chris Marshall of the Clickit Comics Library.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. Okay, the numbers we're going to be talking about in this episode are the top 300 trade paperback, hardcover, graphic novel, yada yada sales through Diamond to retailers for August 2011. Now, as always, we're going to take a look at how the aggregate sales for the top 300 break down, both by units and by dollars. So, for the biggest share of the total units for the top 300, went to DC this time around. And really, it was kind of a close breakdown between Marvel and DC this time around. DC had 26.35% of the total units for the top 300. Marvel only a percent and a point three behind with 25.03%. So between the two, they're just above 50%, combined, with, again, a 1.3% difference between them. Now, in terms of total dollars for those same units, you know, because of the difference in the average price and stuff like that being a bit higher for Marvel than for DC, DC had 28.24% of the total dollars for the top 300, and Marvel had 29.36%. So again, about really a 1.12% difference between the two. So a little over a percent difference by units and by dollars between Marvel and DC this time around. Now, Dark Horse actually did pretty well. It had 14.57% of the total units for the top 300 and 13.5% of the total dollars. Now, what's interesting is DC had 71 total items on the list. Marvel had 64. Dark Horse only had 36. So while it's about 10 percentage point behind Marvel and DC in terms of units and about, 16 or so in terms of dollars, it did it with, you know, significantly fewer items. And really, I mean, to a certain degree, the name of the game is not just how much can you sell, but how efficiently can you do it in terms of the output you have to produce to get those sales. Image came in with 30 items on the list with 9.47% of the units and 8.02% of the dollars. And then everything else is pretty much below the 5% of the units. In some cases, significantly below that with the bottom one, which is, I believe, Premier with 0.13% of the total units for the top 300. But you have an item on the list and, you know, there's 300 items. You get the bottom one, it's not going to tally up to all that much.
Mm-hmm.
So, really, I don't think there's anything terribly surprising about the breakdown this time around. In the past, we've seen kind of a three-way split where it was closer to 33% for Marvel and DC, and the other third kind of getting split amongst all the other publishers. I think lately we've been seeing a lot more of kind of that roughly, you know, 25 to 27% for Marvel and DC each, and then the rest of it going to everybody else.
Yeah, you're almost thinking that would be a welcome sign if that happens, just to divvy everything up more of an even keel, you know. But, you know, we'll see as the year progresses for sure.
I mean, on the one hand, I think it's good for no one publisher to dominate.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the issues on the monthly comics side, Marvel almost always has roughly half the sales, DC about a third or whatever, and then everybody's fighting for table scraps. And on the trade side, it's nice to see that pretty much every publisher actually has a chance to get on the top 300.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that's just the differing amount of material and what sales level it takes to get on the board here. But really, the breakdown here, while it's interesting on a month-by-month basis, or within a month basis, I should say, comparing it month-over-month is really a dangerous thing. And sometimes that percentage shift is to, I mean, Marvel had roughly 25% of the units this time around. That's not to say necessarily they did better or worse last time they had 25% or more than 25% less than. Because, I mean, the size of that pie is shrinking and growing every time.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But, you know, it's interesting that really Marvel and DC are on even footing on this side of the board.
Yeah, I mean, when I look at this, when I always look at this, I you know, the reorder items are nice, but I'm always looking for the new material to come out. And to see, you know, Image having, you know, 8 new items and 22 reorders, you know, it's like, you know, I kind of wish they would put more new product out, but I understand if they can, or it depends on the scheduling and whatnot.
Really, but I kind of take the opposite view on that. I mean, it's nice to have new material, no question about that, and certainly that helps, you know, get sales and whatnot. But since this arena with the trade, the hardcovers, the collected editions and stuff is something where you've got that longer sales curve.
Right.
You know, I think it's good.
The long sale. Right. No, I understand. Yeah.
You know, I think we've got too many things that are coming onto the list once and never really being seen again. You know, flip side, it's a little unfortunate that out of those 22 things from Image, I mean, a lot of them are going to be probably the expected stuff. Mm-hmm. Walking Dead, Chew. I'm trying to think what else routinely places on the board for Image on the trade list. You know, so it's good that they've got a couple of strong properties that are those perennial sellers, but I'd almost rather see different titles showing up maybe, you know, once a quarter or whatever than the same ones month after month after month after month.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it comes down to how many strong properties do they have, and I mean, it's awesome that Chew is really catching hold, that Walking Dead has a firm grasp on, you know, continued sales. But I think with Image in particular, since they've got such a wonderfully diverse lineup of titles, I'd really like to be seeing more of those showing up again on a once a quarter basis, whatever, showing that they've got some longevity to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe not the rabid fan base that you've got on some of these others, but still enough sustained interest.
I guess what I'm getting at is the reorder items are great. There's, you know, that means there people are out there, they're buying it, they like it, they're sharing it with other friends, and you know, whether the Walking Dead TV show's got influence and people are going back to the stores and everything. But as a company grows, I would like to see a company really like Image and IDW to go out and start more new titles and invest in their company and hire more artists and writers and really kind of more expand.
Well, again, Image,
but there is a law of diminishing returns. I do understand that. I do understand economics 101.
By and large, I do agree with you, though, because while I'm saying it's better to do it efficiently, doing it with more properties is different than just doing it with more items.
Right. Well, that's why I compared it to IDW, because I think that's what IDW is exactly what they're doing.
Yeah.
And well, it's good to see them break out.
Yeah. IDW is doing great these days.
I love it.
If somebody had said, you know, 2-3 years ago that they'd be at where they're at now, I mean, on the comic side, they were third highest publisher this time.
Yeah.
I would not have believed that.
Well, we've been watching them for a good 2 years now.
Yeah.
And it's really, they're being consistent, you know.
Well, they're picking good properties to license. They're doing some good original material. They've got a good diversity there. And that's
And wait till, what is it? It's coming out in October. Isn't the Legion Star Trek coming out in October?
Yeah, Legion Star Trek.
Oh, that's
they're also
be
doing
great.
An ongoing for the new Star Trek stuff.
I know, which is something you and I have been clamoring for months.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
so
I'm really happy to see that. And they're doing Gary 7. It's like, how cool.
Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
Well, they're doing the Cold War stuff from John Byrne, new material there. That
yes.
should be a lot of fun. You know, they brought back Next Men. So I like how they're creating new properties. They're doing a fairly good job with the licensed properties. In a few cases, maybe oversaturate a little, but they really, I think, have gotten a lot better at that over the past, you know, half year or so.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, what works well for them where, hey, get more properties out there, get more items on the board and stuff, works well for them. Image Comics, going back to that for a second, totally different company structure.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
I mean, it benefits Image for there to be more things published simply because they're getting that $2,500 an item for everything they traffic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it doesn't really build up their property library, if you will, because they don't have one.
Well, I guess, and we've talked about this before, Image, like it or not, I mean, they are really dependent on Kirkman for a lot of their material, you know? And, you know, if he ever decides to go away and go form Robert Kirkman Comics, you know, Image might be hurting. They've got to have something else in the works, I would think. And, yeah, you do have Chew and a few other things, and Red Wing looks pretty good. But, you know, I don't know, man. You know, we'll see what happens.
Well, I think you're right.
Putting all your eggs in one basket with him.
Well, I don't think they are.
You don't think so?
Well, And look at all these other publisher, all these other properties that they're coming out with and stuff. I think what we're seeing is what is successful for them
right.
tends to be Kirkman. So yes. I don't think that they're, you know, singling him out and I don't say playing favorites or whatever, but banking on him. It's just he is what is bankable. So it's trying to think how best to phrase this. It's a matter of, I mean, you're right. If Skybound were to, you know, and that's Kirkman's company or imprint now.
Imprint, right? The Skybound, right.
Yeah, if he were to just up and go, you know, he would take this month. I'm gonna say 18,000 units in sales.
Right.
You know, out of Image's 28,000 units in sales. So he would have displaced Skybound itself, if listed separately, would have ranked where Image did. Image would have bumped down below Viz, somewhere right, maybe right above or below IDW there on the list here. Mm-hmm. So, you know, do they have an exposure there because he's so much more successful than everybody else? Well, yeah, but because they're not really investing in any particular creator, creators are investing in the Image eye and saying it's worth the $2,500 to be published through that. I mean, it's not a vanity press, but there are aspects of it that have some disturbing similarities. Mm-hmm. You know, and if Kirkman were to say, you know, the $2,500 he's paying for every issue of Invincible, Walking Dead, you know, all the other stuff, because he's got a few other things under the Skybound imprint. I don't know right. if the creators are paying that Image fee, or if he is, or what the deal, or if it's being waived. But yeah, well, he could take his toys and go elsewhere and do fairly well.
Yeah, I mean, he probably likes being at Image, being top dog there, and there's no doubt that he is. I mean, let's call a spade, you know. So yeah, I bet he likes it and likes the attention, and he sees it in the sales charts and sees it in the paycheck and everything. So
yeah, but frankly, I mean, given the success he's had with Walking Dead, the comic, the TV show, the numerous board games,
mm-hmm.
Does he really need the work aspect that comes along with being publisher of Image that takes him away from the writing chores?
Well, you know, every guy, whether you're in sports or acting or music or whatever, the guy on top, when he's got all his awards, all his accolades, you know, a lot of people, for whatever it's worth, they always take a chance and take a big risk on something completely out of their element. And maybe that's what he'll do in a couple of years when, you know, Walking Dead's top right now, but you know what? Every show gets canceled. Mm-hmm. And in 5 years, when it gets canceled and he's in his mid to late 40s, I guess, because I think he's about 39 or 41 now or something like that. Is he in the early 40s?
Thereabouts, I'm not sure.
Something like that. So when, let's say he turns 50 and, you know, he does everything, and, you know, even Springsteen broke up the E Street Band for a while. You know what I mean? So he may want to try completely something different. And with that, he might say, you know, tell Image, hey, thanks a lot. It was a great ride. We'll see you later. And yeah. Image has got to be prepared. And I'm sure they do. I mean, they're smart guys over there, and I'm sure they do a backup plan.
Well, I mean, the bottom line is it doesn't matter to them. They have no massive corporate overhead to really
right.
float every month, you know?
Right, right.
And frankly, there's enough people coming saying, hey, I want to be published. Will you publish me? That I don't think it'd be that hard for them to fill up the roster with other titles. Now, what's interesting over at Image is the Top Cow stuff,
mm-hmm.
because Top Cow is really the last remaining studio left mm-hmm. in terms of the old school Image when it started. And Top Cow really actually has that library of properties, you know, everything from
Witchblade Darkness. And
exactly. Witchblade Darkness, you know, all of those things that Silvestri had done over the years. Mm-hmm. You know, and they've actually done a trade paperback or two, which is nothing more than every page is yet another property they've got. I mean, they've got a surprisingly deep library every time they do one of these pilot season deals.
Right.
You know, this is another thing they've published. So that goes more towards your point of, you know, putting more stuff out there, getting more property, seeing what catches on, keeping going with that, and then seeing if you can leverage it into other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's interesting to watch that kind of dynamic function inside of the overall Image umbrella, which operates under such a unique business model within comics.
Mm-hmm.
So I question myself if the Image I is really worth that $2,500 or not, because I do think more strings come with it than most people think. I don't think it, I mean, you don't just cut them a check and they'll publish you.
Right.
You know, they are putting in some more, I mean, they want to protect their brand, and, right. and they should. I certainly don't fault them for that. It'd be foolish not to. But, you know, it's one of those things where they seem to grow and contract in odd cycles. And, you know, right now I think the diversity they've got is really good. I just think they need to, and Kirkman as publisher, needs to really stand behind a lot of these other creators, get them more recognition, get them out there a bit more.
Right.
You know, help push Elephant Men, push, you know, some of these other things that are being done that you know, people are liking and stuff, but don't quite get the attention that the hot property of the month seems to get.
Well, and that's my point. If Image does not, then these great up-and-coming artists are going to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
They're going to go to IDW. They're going to go to maybe a Boom or something like that.
They're going to get snapped up by Marvel and DC.
Or they could do that.
That's look at how many of the people are working at Marvel and DC right now, writers and artists, used to, I mean, came up through the ranks on the indie side. A lot of them published through Image at one point. So, you know, if Image isn't careful, they could simply become the recruiting arm, the de facto, you know, recruiting arm for Marvel and DC. You know, which, you know, maybe that's not a big deal to them or not, but if they can, it goes back to Kirkman's manifesto from a while back.
You're right.
You know, everybody should do creator-owned comics. It's the best thing in the world. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But it certainly works out better if you make money at it.
Well, that's the thing. Everybody mocked him because it's like, it's nice when you say that when you've got The Walking Dead and it's the hottest thing going, you know?
Yeah, but you mean, there's nothing to say other people can't write that well also.
True, true. His message may be a bit off, but the intent is there, right?
Yeah, there's no question that he really loves comics and he wants to right. help people succeed at that. It's just a matter of he's doing a lot with the TV show Walking Dead and these other properties.
He going one-on-one with that? God, who refuted that, what he was saying? Do you remember?
That wasn't Bendis, was it?
No.
The one at the convention where somebody basically pushed back and said, really?
Right. Was it Azzarello?
I was thinking it was Bendis.
Maybe it was Bendis. Okay, yeah, maybe it was Bendis. I think you're right. Yeah.
And he was basically refuting the sales figures. He was refuting basically saying that Kirkman's unique, period.
Yeah.
You know, and I frankly I disagree with that to a certain degree. I mean, the success Kirkman has had on Walking Dead is astounding. And to a certain degree, very, very unprecedented and unlikely to be repeated to the level it has been. I mean, he kicks it out in any new format and people just come and you know, eat it up. But then you look at other people who have successfully gone through the ranks since Kirkman started Walking Dead. Jonathan Hickman.
Lemire.
Yeah, Lemire. A lot of these guys have gone, done these things, and then, again, gotten inroads into Marvel and DC. Now, did they wake up one morning and decide, you know, this creator-owned stuff's for the birds, it's not for me? I doubt it. I think they woke up one morning and said, you know, I could get a regular paycheck from this other company that would sustain me while I'm working on this stuff on the side. Once my exclusive's over, boom, I've got other stuff I can, you know, kick out or whatever.
Well, like Jason Aaron.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, hey, I'll do Ghost Rider and I'll do Scalped. Why not? Or Wolverine or Punisher or whatever, you know?
I think with Image, what would help them get items on the board on the trade side is finishing a couple of these miniseries.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to War Heroes? 3 issues out of 6.
Right.
You know, and I'm not suggesting this is unique to Image. It is not. I cannot tell you how many titles Bob and I have reviewed the first issue of on the Weekly Comic Spotlight over the 214 or 15 episodes we've done that no number 2 ever came out, or that the miniseries never finished, or something like that.
Well, maybe that's because they only have 8 new items on this list.
Well, no. I'm
you know what I mean?
But not just Image, but across the board.
Well, what I'm saying is it hasn't finished, so therefore they don't have a new trade or hardcover.
Well, that's my point. You finish stuff, you can collect it.
Right.
Or, in the case of Infinite, you just collect the first issue.
Right.
I mean, that's...
Image Comics presents... The first 2 issues, $7.99.
It was the first issue.
Right, but right, I know, but
I mean that takes
for two, like DC is doing, you know.
That takes guts to come out with the first issue of Infinite as a single issue and then say, "You know, we slap a hardcover on that, we could charge $20."
Yeah, exactly.
And then do it. That's the part I am in awe of.
Well, it's right there. It came in at the $2.99 one came in at rank 69. There you go.
Yeah, but how much did the hardcover? I don't know if the hardcover did the hardcover.
Did the hardcover come out? I don't even know.
It was available at San Diego. The question is, did it come out through Diamond?
Okay.
And it may have. I don't know. I can't imagine it. It did well enough to. Well, that might have been in the. No, it would have been in this set of numbers. I was gonna say it might have been in the last months, but I don't know. Maybe they may have done that just strictly as a not through Diamond thing, or the numbers through Diamond were so low it didn't make the list, which would have meant this month being under 389 items. I mean, the thing I want to talk about this time around is, I mean, we look at the top item on the top 300 this time around. Mm-hmm. It's from Dark Horse. It's $19.99 hardcover. It's the second volume of Serenity, covering Better Days and Other Stories. Great stuff. I love it. Big fan of Serenity. Mm-hmm. 4,076 units. Just barely over 4,000 units. That's the top of the list. It's the top of the list by, 400 plus units?
Yep.
Because the next item down, also from Dark Horse, this time at $7.99, is the Star Wars Adventures Chewbacca and Slavers of the Shadowland trade paperback. 3,612 units. You know, the next three items cracked 3,000 units, so the top five items did 3,000 or better. Actually, they did 2,700 units or better. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not that much. You get down past rank 11, you're below 2,500 units.
Yeah, that's pretty weak.
So depending how many stores are out there, and that's something that's really nebulous, it's maybe 2,500, maybe it's 3,000, maybe the top five, top 10 items made it on average mm-hmm. into every store. And that's if every store ordered the exact same number, which obviously they don't. Mm-hmm. Some would go really heavy on Serenity, others wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. You know, Bob and I talked a little this time around on how it would be nice if Diamond would provide the number of outlets out of, you know, X out of Y that these items got in. Mm-hmm. In other words, there are some like that. Well, we'll go with that Serenity. Maybe it made it into 100% of the outlets. Maybe it made it into 95. Maybe it made it into 10, but they ordered really heavily. Who knows?
Right.
I think that would actually be very telling, particularly on this list as you get down below where there is no way every store could have ordered everything. There just simply aren't enough units, you know? Down at rank 11, at 2,502 units, estimated units, so give or take a few, is the Shadowland trade paperback from Marvel. Okay, maybe it's in most stores. However, you go down to rank 45, you get the Shadowland Daredevil trade paperback, 1,543 units. Obviously, it didn't make it into every store. At best, it made it into 3/5, give or take, half, I don't know.
Right, right.
So, and that's the sell-in number to the stores. The sell-through numbers, which is, you know, what the stores actually sell to end readers, obviously is going to be less than that. I mean, they can't sell more than they got. Granted, some stuff may have come in through other channels, because some are still using book sales, where they get some returnability to higher price, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, when I'm seeing the sales figures go below, you know, 2,000, once we're out of the top 25, what's wrong with this? Where are these trade paperbacks? I don't want to say where did things go wrong, but people are always saying that, you know, well, it's making up for it in trade. And right now,
not this month.
Well, no, certainly not this month. But right now, that holy grail, I think, is kind of clearly evaporated to a large extent. So the new one is digital.
Right.
There's the digital revolution going on. I'm not going to say digital sales aren't there. I don't know. Maybe they're gangbusters. I hope they are. But as recently as Comic-Con, IDW was saying that 3% of their income was coming from digital. And IDW has been very strong and aggressive on the digital market for many years now. I can't imagine that suddenly in the last 2-3 months, you know, flipped a switch and is just gangbusters and is, you know, 10 times what it had been or something like that. I certainly think digital is a major factor. I think it is a growing factor.
Mm-hmm.
But until we get some hard numbers that we can look at, seeing press releases of people saying, well, it's the best-selling thing ever in digital for us, which is, I think, what Marvel said about the Ultimate Spider-Man number one.
Right. I read that this week. Right.
Great. What does that equate to in sales?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know,
they're,
and if some...
being very hush-hush about that, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, totally. And why not? Yeah. It sounds better to say this is the best thing for us ever in digital sales versus,
right.
You know, the last thing we sold that did really well did 30 copies, which I'm not saying they did that low, but you know what I mean.
Well, that's the thing. I've got, when I read the press release, I had no clue as to what they even meant by that. Did they sell it through their own app? Was it Comicology? Was it across the board? You know, and how many copies? And I was guessing maybe 1,000 copies.
Who knows?
Is that low? I mean,
we have no benchmark to use on this is the problem.
Right.
And they're not going to give us one. Why should they?
Right.
And I mean, I dislike that, but I certainly don't fault them for that.
Right.
Were I in their position, I would do the exact same sort of thing. Spin it how you can to make yourself look good.
Right.
That's the name of the game.
Well, and that's the other thing. I was very skeptical when they said it was the number one selling digital comic. I mean...
Well, they didn't say that.
What did they say?
They said it was the best digital comic they had sold.
Okay. Right. Okay, that's very vague then. And it's, see, you know what? But here's the skeptic in me. It's a new number one, right? They're trying to get the ball rolling on this title. So why not spin out a press release to get everybody interested in it?
Oh, yeah.
You know?
I mean, again, it's very much a PR kind of a thing.
Yeah.
You know, within the first week, suddenly it's gangbusters. That gives it the impression of, well, everybody else is getting it. Why shouldn't I?
And you know what? I'll revisit that in about 6 months to see how the monthly regular periodical sales are doing on it. You know,
mm-hmm. I mean, they're not lying. They're not being disingenuous. You're not doing anything of the sort. This is the way marketing works, the
right.
way it should work. They're trying to generate interest in these titles. And if they do it by basically being pretty vague and ambiguous as to, like you said, was it the best selling through their Marvel app, through Comicology's app, through everything combined, whatever? I mean, how many ways could you slice and dice stuff to where it would arguably become the best of something?
Mm-hmm.
And then if you spin it just right, people aren't going to hear what you say, but hear what they expect you to have said.
Right.
Oh, wow, it's the best selling digital comic ever. Oh, no. You know, it goes back to how people who have, not, I don't know how many, I don't know, but I know of at least one case where somebody who is a press secretary for a president later went on to be a journalist, or actually was a journalist and then became the press secretary. I forget the exact, you know, timeline or whatever. Obviously, not a history major here. But being the press secretary for a president, being a journalist for television and radio and stuff, flip sides of the same coin.
Mm-hmm.
It comes down to, are you asking a question or answering it, and which can you do better, or can you do both well?
Mm-hmm.
And by playing that other side of the chessboard, you can really kind of see, well, okay, this is where they're tap dancing. This is where they have a solid answer. You know, this is where I need to ask the questions. This is where it's not worth asking the questions. You know, this is why the numbers I look at are ones I can get down to estimated sales. Is there some wiggle room in this? Certainly. Is this something that covers everything? Absolutely not, nor do we pretend it to be. But it's a lot clearer that Serenity Volume 2 here sold about twice as much as that Showcase Presents Trial of the Flash down at rank 25.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we can equate it down to the numbers. If this were just an ordered list, well, you know, Serenity Number 2, it's top-selling item. You know, Showcase Presents Trial of the Flash, wow, that's way down at rank 25. It must have sold a hell of a lot less. Sometimes we've seen a huge difference between the number one and number two items. Matter of fact, this month, if you go on the comics side, there's not quite a 2-to-1 difference, but it's actually not too far from that.
Right.
You know? So having something that you can get away from the ambiguous marketing speak, get away from the ambiguous. Well, how far apart are those ranks? Because there's the assumption, well, they're evenly spaced, when they never are, you know, and getting down to something like this. Until we get that level of information about digital sales, I'm going to remain skeptical. Mm-hmm. And hopefully groundlessly so. I hope, again, sales there are just through the roof, because they're sure as hell not that way here.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the other thing. I mean, if they were so, I mean, I don't even know what Marvel or DC or anybody, you know, what is a good selling point for them? How many units must they sell? You know, we have no way to gauge that. And I'm wondering if they even know how to gauge that.
I would like to see somebody from Comixology or somewhere else, one of the main, you know, and Comixology, I think, is at least perceived to be the main digital sales site.
Yeah.
Whether they really are or the big one or not, I don't know. But to know how they go through and do the metrics on their sales.
Mm-hmm.
Are they doing aggregate sales? Are they doing sales on a time slice basis, you know, per week, per month, whatever?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how are they looking at the metrics? Do they consider something successful if it sold X units total, or, you know, all up front, or maybe it sold X units, but it took it a couple of months to get there, and it's a slow and steady seller, so it's going to go up above that X because it's going to keep selling, whereas the one that got most of it up front, well, interest is gone.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I think we've seen, and this is more a phenomenon in the back issue market than the new issue market, interest in back issues of a title go away when the title goes away.
Right.
You know, there's no push to keep people interested in you know, titles that have ended. You know, if you go through like the Overstreet price guide over the last, you know, 20 years or whatever, or as far back as say like when Camelot 3000 first came out, huge spike in how the prices are for those things, which reflect an amount of interest in those issues. And those kind of drift down a little bit. You know, you got to factor in inflation and that kind of stuff. But you look at that for a lot of things where the price is based on being quote-unquote hot versus actual scarcity. I mean, there are going to be certain titles, Walking Dead, the first half dozen issues or whatever. There just aren't that many out there. Those are going to retain value. But some of these other things where, you know, the New Green Lantern number one had a misprint. I've heard that that's going for, you know, $20-$30.
Yeah.
A year from now, do you think it's still going to go that way? Don't know.
Don't know. Right.
I question it. Misprint, you know, another can of worms, but still. I think it's interesting that with a lot of these trades we're seeing here near the top of the list being supported by ongoing titles, which arguably have people still talking about them, and they're just not doing all that great. I mean, the FF by Hickman, Volume 1, Premier Hardcover, 2,685 units down at rank 6 there. That's not too bad. Not brilliant.
Right.
It's Jonathan Hickman. He's on FF, you know? It's something that people are aware of. It's a big publisher, big property, etc. It just seems to me that the wait for the trade has gotten more for the wait than anything. And I have to imagine we're going to see a very similar sort of lackadaisical, relaxed attitude towards, well, I can buy it later. Why buy it now?
Well, on digital. Yeah, that right. I'll wait for the trade, and people see the trade coming out, and they're like, you know what? I really don't want it anyway. You know what I mean? I mean, they wait the 8 months for it to come out, and then they decide against it. So,
well, rank 27. Superman Grounded Volume 1 Hardcover.
Oh my god. Right. I can't believe it's that low. I really
1977. You can't? I mean, come on. One, it's a hardcover. $22.99.
Right.
Six issues, right? Okay. This is stuff that finished 6 months ago.
Right.
That but even at the time people were slamming.
That's DC does that with every title though.
No, and I think they're smart not to rush to collect it. I agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
But the ramification of that is people have had time to read pretty much the full story. Certainly those six issues talk about it and basically, you know, nobody be interested in it. Plus, you know, well, there are going to be delays. They're going to be filling issues on the second half, et cetera, et cetera. How does that help the sales on this? How does it do anything but hurt the sales on that collected edition? For a collected edition to really do well, the monthly version of it needs to knock it out of the park, get good word of mouth, and maintain that right around the time the whole ordering and buying of these issues, the collected edition comes out.
Well, yeah, I guess. I mean, you could say that for some titles, but I mean, not all collected editions are like, I mean, when we look at this list though, right? I mean, we're looking at graphic novels. We're looking at classic material like Trial of the Flash. We're looking at recent material like Grounded. You know what I mean?
And that's a fair distinction, because you're right. There's a world of difference between like that Showcase Presents Trial of the Flash, which is
or League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. I mean, we have ripped apart this list many, many times. How unfair and how unbalanced it is. And we get the art books in here.
I think the fundamental difference in material though between those three categories. You've got Grounded, which is just reprint of current material. So fresh in people's mind, they know what to expect. And if they don't, they know who to go ask. You then have things like the Showcase Presents Trial of the Flash. That's presenting, you know, vintage material, we'll say.
Right.
In this case, from the 80s, in some cases, the Golden Age, Silver Age, whatever. It's something that's not likely you're going to find the new issues on still on the rack at a store that stocks deep. Okay? But again, you would know kind of who to go ask on some of that stuff.
Right.
But then you've got things like League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, other things that are more the original to collected edition kind of thing, which, I mean, those sell on a different, you know, mentality entirely, too.
I mean, also, I mean, you know, with Superman, it also was a lousy story.
That's my point.
Right.
Not only was it a lousy story, everyone knows it was. They've heard at least that people thought it was a lousy
story.
Right.
And Wonder Woman Odyssey is going to be the same way. You know, that was not a very good story.
And it makes you wonder how the things that they're going to collect at the tail end of the DC old lineup, where people are thinking, well, whether it did mark time or not, a lot of people felt like that's all it was doing for a lot of those ending stories.
Right.
Which is hideously unfair to the creators. In a lot of cases, they were pretty good stories.
Right.
I think too many of them ended with a, but it's the end kind of metatextual aspect to it, if you know what I mean.
See, I understand where you're going, because I need to correct myself, because Flashpoint, the hardcover, is coming out in October.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, all the ancillary titles of the tie-ins, they're all coming out in trade paperback in March of 2012.
Really?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
That's crazy, right.
I would have put those out all around the same time.
Or in November or something like that, right.
I would have.
Yeah. It is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
But
I would have to think about how to do that. I would do that as a, I don't know if I'd do it every week kind of release or whatever, but I mean, I would not space them out too much.
See, I'll tell you what's crazy. I mean, this notion of a 1,200-page hardcover absolute book, whatever you want to call it, about with all the 52 number ones coming out in December from DC. I mean, that is, it's a collector's wet dream is what it is. You know what I mean? It's one of those things. You're only going to get that if you're really, really serious, because if you wanted to read the stories, pick up the third printing of Detective Comics when it comes out next week or something like that. You know, I mean, but, you know, so they're rushing out all these printings, but that, as far as a collected edition and a reprint, is just beyond me. I mean, I have no interest in something like that, but I have a lot of collected, you know, and high quality stuff, as you do too.
Yeah.
And Bob does too. But
well,
I think more into that than I am. Right. But I think getting like that is just pretty excessive.
It's funny, because if they had a less high-end, more of a pass-it-around-the-office packaging of all of that,
right?
I'd be tempted to do, I mean, if it was low-cost in a couple of months where I could get a couple of trades, or here's the first week, second week, third week, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
That I could just take, put in the office, and let people flip through when they have time, I could see doing that.
Right.
I can't see doing the uber-expensive hardcover thing.
No, because it'll look great on the shelf, but it's got no coherent story. You know what I mean? I mean, I want the story. I don't really care if it's all number ones.
I think they're going for...
I'd rather have all the number one periodicals than the number one hardcover.
Oh, totally, totally. Same here.
That's what I'm getting at, yeah.
I think the reason they're doing it is kind of the equivalent of the starter's gun at a race.
It is. It's a vanity thing for them, totally.
I don't think it's a vanity thing. I think it's actually, you know, marking a moment in history. you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Granted, a one that they contrived to set up. They didn't have to relaunch everything. But this is a turning point for comics.
It is.
Not just for DC. I mean, the fact everything day and date digital, the entire superhero line, now day and date digital, period. That is reality. That is a game changer.
And they're not going back. I mean, that's something you can't go back on, so.
They could. They could.
They could on some titles. Right?
I don't see why they would.
Well, right. That's exactly. Yeah.
You know, you've got to do all this through. I mean, they're doing digital versions to get it ready for production anyways.
Right.
Why not have a production guy spend a little time, kick it over to Comicology or wherever, kick it up on the digital sales site? I mean, where's the downside to that? There is none. So it's a smart business move.
Well, and you probably have seen the Slave Labor graphics, what they're going to do.
Going all digital?
All digital on their new titles, you know.
They're not the first ones to do that, I don't think.
I don't think they are either.
I think Claypool was one of the first established publishers, because they'd been around 10, 20 years, that a couple of years back when Diamond upped their order threshold minimums, Claypool went, said, well, we're not going to do print then.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether they're still around in any capacity, I really haven't looked, because, you know, for me, I buy enough comics through previews that I really don't see the need to go looking elsewhere for more material. And that's something that until there is a digital previews equivalent that would point you towards, well, you can get this over at Comicology, this over here, this from Panelfly, this from Iverse or whatever the other one is. Mm-hmm. I can't keep them all straight. I apologize for that, too. I talked to a lot of these guys in San Diego. They don't have enough brand awareness in my mind, and there is no single-stop shopping that I am aware of for me to go find all of these things. And until there is that TV guide equivalent, I got to wonder how going digital only is really going to work for some of these.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Red 5 has done that with a number of properties,
mm-hmm.
and presumably it works well for them. I read their stuff in print. You know, for that matter, Scott Kurtz has been doing gangbusters with PvP, the online comic strip, for years.
For years, right.
I was reading that in print when he got around to putting it in print. He stopped doing it, I stopped reading it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't like it any less, it's just that's how I consume stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, maybe that'll change, I don't know. I see the sales trends and the buying habits and patterns on the trade side being very applicable, potentially, to the digital side, and maybe even compounded there. Because again, that Serenity, that Shadowland, that Showcase Presents Trial of the Flash, people are going to have walked of a buyer of print comics, traditionally, excluding those of us who order from DCBS and those sorts of equivalents, would walk into a comic store, look around, oh, they see that Shadowland, do they get it or not? They make the decision then and there.
Mm-hmm.
They can always come back to the store and get it later. They can always go look at Barnes & Noble or wherever, another comic shop, whatever. It's not like that's their only chance to ever get it.
Mm-hmm.
But from a very functional, practical point of view, there is, from when they walk in the door of that comic store to when they walk out, that is their decision window.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of forces a decision to get made de facto, if nothing else. They may just simply have forgotten about it, walk out without it, and think, oh man, I should have gotten it, I forgot. However, on the digital side, well, you pick up your iPad, your Google tablet or phone or whatever device, you could always go get that Shadowland or that Serenity or whatever that item is, you know, that Justice League number one that's out. In theory, forever, you could go get that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if I could wait 10 years, I mean, hell, you know, it's going to go down in price in a couple of weeks. I'll just wait for that.
Right.
Well, you know, at that point, you know, they keep sending me these Monday morning emails about these 99-cent sales. Well, why don't I just wait and see if it shows up there?
Yeah.
So,
is that what the plan is? I mean, isn't it going to go down like every month or every week or?
My understanding was
$2.99 or
price parity for the first 4 weeks. After that, it drops a dollar. Period. That's it.
Do you think it'll go down to 99 cents? Like,
well, the
months,
99 cents are sales doorbusters, that kind of a thing.
Yeah,
it's a get it this weekend for 99 cents. Not it is 99 cents forever after.
Well, no, that's fine. But as long as it drops down to 99 cents. That you have the potential to buy it for that price.
If you time it right, well, yeah, it's just like sales happen at other stores, you know?
Yeah.
But by doing that at all, they've set that expectation.
Yeah.
So why get it now? Again, you're training people to wait.
Right.
That's easy.
It's too bad they don't have a quarter bin sale, you know, because 99 cents, it's still a lot of money for what you're getting, I think, you know.
Yeah, well.
It's the same as a song, you know.
Whether people find it worth the money or not, I don't know.
Right.
But because it's a buck, it's half the price of what it would normally be, why not wait?
Right.
It gives a barometer or a metric for how interested somebody really is in something.
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to pay the premium price to get it right now? Are they going to wait a couple of weeks to get it for a buck cheaper? Are they going to wait till it's the theoretical low point of the 99 cents?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the minute one of these publishers, like Comixology or whatever, starts doing a 49 cent sale, okay, now they've set a new threshold that people, well, I'm only that interested. I'm not 99 cents worth interested. I'm not the buck 99. I'm certainly not the 2.99. Or maybe I am, you know, whatever. Different thresholds, different properties, different people, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But the minute that you've pushed out even further the potential for that delayed decision,
mm-hmm.
you know, the more people are going to wait.
I guess I just go back to, and this is across the board, you know, I look at the DVDs they had a couple of years ago, and yeah, they're PDFs or whatever they are. But you know what? You could buy the entire 500-issue run of Spider-Man for, what, $30, you know? And
I think retail price was either $45 or $49.99,
yeah,
or whatever.
But you know, what I mean?
Practically, you're getting, you could get it as low as $30 or $35, yeah.
Right, but so if you compare it to something like that, you know, it's a bargain on those DVDs.
Oh, that's
so,
why I got
I mean,
them all.
Right, and yeah, I've got the Star Trek one and a couple other ones, and I'm like, so why would I go out and buy Spider-Man 1 through 100 for a buck a piece? For $100, when I could have gotten the first 500 issues for $45, you know?
Well, for one, those DVDs are a lot harder to find.
They are.
At one point, they had them at Austin Books here in town. I don't know if they still do.
Yeah.
But any local listeners, because I'm here in Austin, Texas, if you're interested in that, check them out. If they still have it, let me know so I can let other listeners know. Great deal. Yes, they're PDFs. You could question the scan quality and the copy quality they scan from and stuff, but again, $30 to $50 for 40 some odd years worth of X-Men, Captain America, Spider-Man, Fantastic Four, or what else did they have? They put the entire Civil War stuff on one for a cheaper price. I mean, it was a great deal
mm-hmm.
for the reader. Horrible deal for the publisher.
Yeah.
Sell it once, boom, that's it. You know, that was a very bad business model for the publishers. Marvel then went to their digital comics online, where it's now a subscription fee. You pay us X month much every month, we'll give you access to some stuff. You stop paying, you stop getting. And you don't actually keep anything ever. Now, with the digital download and all that stuff, I haven't really dug in enough to know, you know, if I get that on my phone and I had a tablet, do I get the same version on both? Are they different accounts? If I swap out my phone for a new phone, do I still get it? How all that works? I'm sure it's perfectly clear to most people. I just haven't really dug into it because I'm not that into digital.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to be very interesting to see how that format works over the long term, because it just seems so easy for people to put off in the purchase, to get distracted.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an obvious counter for that. Tell brilliant stories. Tell stories that people simply cannot wait for the next installment of. And there are people in comics who have been able to do just that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, very few of them have actually been able to do just that in comics, Kirkman being a good example with Walking Dead. However, Damon Lindelof on Lost, which also had Geoff Johns on it at times, a lot of comics writers have been involved in that. That was a TV show that, man, people were just on the edge of their seats. They couldn't wait for that next episode. They were wanting that, focused on that. Wow, you're going to make us wait so long, you know, whatever. That kind of rabid fan base,
mm-hmm.
that's what you need.
You do, right.
Right now, the big problem is apathy. You know, we're in the middle of the relaunch of the new DC stuff as we record this. I've only read the first week of stuff. I've liked it all, but I really don't think there was that much for the most part that made me think, wow, I just simply have got to get that next issue right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what I think comics need. Certainly looking at these trade sales, looking at sales and some of the stuff over on the comics side, I'm not seeing that drive for people to be getting stuff now.
Yeah, I mean, if I were to say a title about that, I would say Action Comics and Batgirl. I really like those two titles. You know, Action for me, just out of the first week, just, you know, and I'm not much of a Morrison fan, and I was telling you before we started, but, you know, something about it, the pacing was pretty good, and the art was really good. And I would have picked up number two right away.
Well, one of the things we're going to need to do, and I'm going to ask you and the listeners to remind me, because I will forget, is when the next batch of numbers comes out, I need to kind of archive off for easy reference. I've got all the data, so it's not like I'll lose the data or anything, mm-hmm. but keep it squirreled away for easy reference, the rankings of the new number ones for DC.
Right.
To where when we start getting the collected editions for these, we can compare to that.
Right.
And it'll be interesting. It's like, okay, you know, Justice League did really well this month on the new number one with 171,344 units for just the comic. But then if you factor in the combo pack, that added another 14,432 units. So, you know, all said and done, that put it at 185,776 units. So that right there sets a clear benchmark of, you know, beat this for all the other titles. And don't know how many of the others are even going to come close. Action Comics might, a few others, who knows. But from that ranking of those titles, you know, are we going to see the same sort of sales trends or rankings and relative rankings and stuff on the trade side? Or is that really going to show, gee, is Animal Man and Swamp Thing, is that going to do better over there? Because those readers are used to reading more on the trade side because it's more Vertigo type stuff.
Right.
You know, I don't know.
Or are they gonna buy the number ones and like, yeah, this isn't my Swamp Thing. And they'll drop it right away. I think the number ones across the board are going to do very well.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's the number 3, 4, and 5 we got to look out for, the real drop-offs.
We're going to have harsh drop-offs on number 2.
Yeah, I think so,
too. I mean, you look at this month over on Marvel, some of the drops on the number 2s, Captain America dropped by over 45%, almost 46%.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Daredevil just shy of 39%. These are not unusual. We saw very similar drops on some of the recent relaunches of the X-Books.
Right.
There's no reason to think this isn't going to happen on the DC titles. And I really think that one of the things that will help mitigate that and help prevent that or diminish its likelihood on DC's part was how strongly they're standing behind the material.
Mm-hmm.
The returnability for the first 3 months worth of stuff. They might have extended that to 4, but at least 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the reprints they're doing to keep the stuff available. I mean, they're going all out, and I really respect that and appreciate that. They realize it would be very bad for them to have a demand for material that just doesn't get filled, because that, you know, 185,000 units sets a benchmark. The rest of those issues of Justice League going forward, statistically speaking, based on past history, will do less than that.
Mm-hmm.
Could a title turn around and go above its starting point? Certainly.
Sure, yeah.
But when it starts that high, not so common. I'm going to be very curious to see how, again, the rankings go between the different formats and stuff. I'd like to see a ranking on the digital side, even if it doesn't have numbers behind it. Just to see if it ranks differently there. Personally, I think Animal Man and Swamp Thing, because they're Vertigo-ish, you know, titles, the trade paperback readers of that type of stuff from Vertigo,
right,
are likely to gravitate to that format. But, you know, we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. They could say this is an all new thing. It's not my cup of tea. I don't want it mixed in with Superman, Batman, and the rest.
Mm-hmm. Even though it used to be.
I mean, details.
I know. Batman and Superman showed up in Alan Moore's run, you know?
Yeah, but that was really before Vertigo proper.
It was before. You're right. I'm splitting hairs. I know that, John. Well, I know. But know where I'm going.
Oh, I know exactly where you're going. I mean, there were a couple of titles that started firmly in the DC universe and became Vertigo titles.
Well, that's the thing. And right. It didn't like... Maybe I could be wrong, but when the whole Vertigo thing took off, It's not like they released a new number one Swamp Thing with the Vertigo number. They just kind of morphed into it.
They just rebranded it between issues.
They did, right.
It's DC one time, DC Vertigo the next.
Exactly. That right. happened and the with numbering Swamp stayed Thing, the same, right.
Animal
exactly.
Man, Hellblazer, and I think Doom Patrol.
Yeah, right, and Doom Patrol, right.
So, you know, and it goes back to the two Vertigos. There's the Vertigo universe, if you will, which is now into the DC universe proper. The Swamp Thing, the Animal Man, Manum Xanadu, Shade the Changing Man, those characters that originally started in the DC universe got co-opted by the Vertigo imprint and are now getting back. And then there is the creator-owned Vertigo stuff, the Fables.
Right. And Hellblazer, which is still there.
Hellblazer is an interesting one. That's kind of like the Punisher Max thing.
Right.
Hellblazer coexists in both.
Right.
Whether it's the same character or not, probably not. Don't know.
But that Hellblazer in Vertigo right now was the one spun off from Swamp Thing.
Yes. Yes.
Right.
But while he has been integrated back into the DC universe even prior to Flashpoint with the Search for Swamp Thing series.
Right. Search for Swamp Thing. Right.
He's still existing as such in Vertigo, so to me, I while it is the same character, it's different continuities.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I kind of see the Punisher over at Marvel that way.
Mm-hmm.
There's the Punisher Max Punisher, and then there's the Marvel Universe Punisher.
And there's Deadpool, right, same thing, right, exactly.
You know, and that's a tricky thing to pull off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's...
It works for Punisher, you know.
It can, but it can also lead to very confused customers.
Right.
I had a coworker on my last job who, for the longest time, didn't realize that the Ultimate Spider-Man was a different character than Spider-Man. They thought it was just another title.
Right, right, exactly, right. I could see that.
You know, because Marvel, no doubt, thought they had branded it properly and it was clear it was different. I mean, it's...
Well, and the movies, are much more in line with the Ultimates than the 616, even though the 616 is trying to become that.
Yeah, yeah.
Slowly.
I really think these publishers, DC in particular, but certainly Marvel as well, need to take better ownership of their properties and have those things reflected more accurately in other mediums. Because what's happening is, with this new relaunch at DC, we're seeing a more Smallville-type... Green Arrow and Lex Luthor.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to see a more Arkham video game version of Harley Quinn, which came from the cartoons, and then go into the comics and stuff. So it's like retreaded material.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a dangerous thing. It's quite possible that the Superboy we're going to get, and I think I got that this week, but I just got it, actually, my shipment an hour or two back, could be the one from the way they solicited it sounds like it's very similar to what's coming in the, or what's in the Young Justice cartoon.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I got that vibe too. Yeah.
Brilliant cartoon. I'm loving the cartoon. But whose character is this?
Mm-hmm.
And why are they having to reinterpret a reinterpretation of their character?
Mm-hmm.
That just seems like, I don't say admitting defeat, but...
Well, no, it could mean that this character really, really works. This time, we're going to go with this version of Connor, or whatever they're going to call him. You know, because you said you enjoy Young Justice, so why not go with that version that everybody's familiar with? So I could see that.
But shouldn't the one that everyone's familiar with be the one from the comics that then got faithfully interpreted out in these other mediums?
Yeah, but then it kind of goes back to what I was saying about Marvel integrating the Ultimates, you know, into their movie properties. You know, they're not basing it on the 616, they're basing it on the Ultimates. So they're going with what is familiar in the general public, not us comic book fans.
Yeah, but the problem was the general public is so swayed by what's in the moment.
Exactly.
If
right.
you were to ask people,
but you know,
who
but
are
I
the
think,
original
I think,
X-Men?
I think that corporate is making that decision.
Yeah, but
you know?
If you were to ask the average American over the years, who are the X-Men?
Yeah.
Or who are the original X-Men?
Oh, they'd say Wolverine, and they'd
well,
say...
it depends.
Yeah.
I mean, they would have at one point been influenced by the Fox cartoon that had the music, the da-na-na-na-na, you know, kind of thing with the CG effects for the credits and stuff. They would have been influenced by the movies at one point, the X-Men Evolution cartoon at one point, now X-Men First Class, It really kind of swings with, well, whatever's the current interpretation du jour.
Right. It's funny you bring that up, because I just sat down and I'm reading the original X-Men for the first time in years.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to read all my masterworks straight on through. I'm done with book one already. I'm going to start book two tonight. And boy, is that different.
Oh, yeah. Totally. Totally. It's good stuff, though. I liked it.
It's okay. It's you know, Kirby and Lee. I'm looking forward to the end of volume number two when Roy Thomas comes on.
I can see that.
Yeah.
I can see that.
It's
one of those things, though, as the owners of these properties, it behooves them to keep tighter control over them, but to keep things more consistent.
Mm-hmm.
And not to be basically shifting them around as the corporate winds and what's the most popular version, you know, those winds shift.
Mm-hmm.
The funny thing is, I think there's a great Fables story to be had in this conversation, mm-hmm. where basically you would have a Fable that's a superhero that just every time they're walking down the street, it's like, well, you know, suddenly he's been revamped because, you know, that's when the new movie came out or whatever.
Right.
I don't know. We'll see how all this does. I mean, I looked at these numbers this time around and frankly was unimpressed.
Right.
Totally
unimpressed. Are you kidding me? Yeah.
There are a lot of these that just did okay.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of these that did really kind of badly, you know? I mean, Halcyon from Image, which I really enjoyed, 1,256 units down at rank 80.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I think the timeliness of it coming out didn't help it much, but it wasn't like it was that late. And there are a couple other things that... not surprised how they did. A little above that one at rank 73 was the Shadowlands Street Heroes trade paperback. 1,314 units. You know, it's... these are things that are not doing great on the collected side. Didn't do all that great on the monthly side. Mm-hmm. Shadowlands Thunderbolts. 1,006 estimated units. It's like, really? You gotta wonder sometimes how much of this is worth coming out with in trade over at DC. Outsiders, The Great Divide trade paperback.
Well, it also tells you that maybe that Marvel shouldn't do so many titles wrapped up in these mini events.
Oh, totally, totally. But then, you know, this Outsiders one, Outsiders, The Great Divide, it's part of collecting a monthly series.
Right.
865 units down at rank 131. That's harsh. You know, that's not something you could argue, well, it's oversaturated. Do we need a mini event? Do we need so many spin-off things from it, etc.? Which are very, very valid points and ones that I tend to agree with. I think the numbers on the monthly comics side really illustrate that for these events like Flashpoint, like Fear Itself, over half the people have zero interest in the side titles. In some cases, the interest there is maybe 20% of the sales of the main title that month. So more often than not, people aren't reading them.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think they make sense to do. But when you've got the collected edition of a monthly title in the DC universe doing under 1,000 units, wow. You know, what do you do for that writer? What you do is you give him another book on the new 52.
Right.
I'm sorry. I like Dan DiDio, the job he's been doing as a publisher, as in the editorial side and stuff. But for the most part, a lot of his writing has not been working for me, and I think the sales reflect that.
Yeah.
That having been said, he did the Metal Men stuff in Wednesday Comics, didn't he?
He did. That was good.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
That was great.
Well, and I'm liking OMAC. I really am.
We'll agree to disagree on that one.
Okay.
I was underwhelmed.
All right.
And part of that was the art.
Are you going to keep by? Are you going to give another shot with number two and three?
Oh yeah, or? I'm probably going to give the 52 the first story arc. I'm
okay.
Going to give these things a fair shake. I am not one of these that the minute something displeases me in the slightest, I drop it like a hot potato.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of readers are very finicky. Now, granted, at $2.99, $3.99 a shot, it's understandable. But the way I figure it, every title is going to have high points. They're going to have low points, and I'm willing to write out a little bit of a low point just to see how things go. I know that every book I read this week, that my ability to pick in advance what are going to be the brilliant books this week, not that great.
Mm-hmm.
As a result, the shipment I got today had 49 comics in it. That's a weekly shipment.
Yeah.
Now, there are the traditional response that I think most creators who have gone on record on that sort of a comment, have come back with is there can't possibly be 49 great books every week. They're not.
They're not.
Not even close.
No.
Most of them are good enough. But yeah, not every one of these guys is the creators behind this are going to knock it out of the park. However, the odds of me having gotten some of the best books of the week, pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Now, less so on the indie side because I'm not so much into that. But odds are, if there is a brilliant book set in the Marvel or DC universe, I've read it.
Mm-hmm.
Statistically speaking, if there's a really steaming pile of oh my god, they published that, I probably read that too.
Probably read it too, right, exactly.
Therefore, I can tell you what's good and bad because I've read it both.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that I think gives me an interesting perspective over some of the other guys crunching the numbers on the sales every month.
Right.
Is I really don't know how much, how many comics Milton Greep reads or John Jackson Miller. Now, granted, they've got better insights into parts of the industry and stuff like that than I do. And certainly they know their stuff. There's no question about that. But it's one thing to know kind of the ins and outs of the business. It's another to actually have read, you know, a lot of this material.
Yeah.
Well,
I certainly don't read every collected edition that comes out every week either, so.
Oh, you can't. And if it wasn't for the fact that I've read a lot of the things on this trades list in monthly format, I wouldn't have read most of this stuff either.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I've got a lot better coverage on the comics side than on the trade side by a huge margin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of these things that are collecting newspaper strips or titles I don't read or, you know, more of the vintage material and stuff like that.
You mean you weren't one of the, 389 people that pre-ordered the Boris Karloff Tales of Mystery Volume 6 at number 300 this month?
No, I was not. Nor was I part of the 395 that ordered the I Kill Giants trade paperback, which is reorder activity.
It's a reorder.
However, I did order all seven and read all seven when they came out originally.
Okay.
So it's...
God, volume six. I don't know if they're going to be able to finish that. You know, when companies like Dark Horse or whoever, you know, Hermes Press, say they're committed to a run of a reprint title and only... less than 400 people are buying it, you wonder how long they can really commit to it.
I go back to that,
you know, IDW's Little Orphan Annie right above it at $295.
Totally, but I think they're looking at the long term. They don't need to sell that initially.
No.
They need to sell enough to make it worth doing the print run that they can then sell the others later.
Yeah.
So long-term commitment. However, you look at like that Outsiders trade paperback I was talking about, under 900 copies.
Right.
That just doesn't make sense. And I think it would behoove DC and Marvel to stop collecting everything.
Yeah.
Wait until there's some demand. Wait until people actually demand some of this stuff and say, you know, when are you ever going to do it? It's like, oh, well, you know, we've had enough people ask. Boom, here it is.
Well, that was my point, and we'll wrap this up. But, you know, with 52, the new 52, I should say.
Yeah.
I wrote on a blog post months ago when this thing was first announced. I'm like, I wonder if everything is going to even get collected into a trade. Maybe, you know, maybe they're just going to keep it from periodical and then digital.
You know what I would do? I would be, and this might be a horrible idea, I would be tempted if I were the guys at DC, and I'm not, or the guys at Marvel for that matter, I would take the bottom 10% of the DC Universe or Marvel Universe titles and not collect those.
Yeah.
Period. Maybe later, not to say never collect them. But, I mean, obviously the Vertigo stuff and some of these other, you know, non-DC Universe stuff are different, okay? Those don't factor in. But, you know, if Outsiders is near the bottom of that list, you know, there's not enough demand to make it worth printing.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be better to spend, I think, that money to keep other things that are actually selling in print and to let people know if you're not supporting the monthly books, why should we collect them?
Well,
now, realistically, they've got most of the work done. Where's the loss? But
it comes back to the mini events again, like the Shadowlands and the Spider Islands and everything. Do they need all these extra little titles? I mean, no, they don't. You know, I mean, and it's fine if they want to push them out, go right ahead. But you're right, they don't need to collect everything.
I asked Bob Wayne about the whole miniseries thing. Are you guys going to keep doing it? Because he had basically said that his job was to make it as hard as possible for people to drop books. Great. I salute that. I think that's brilliant.
but it's making me hard to buy new books. If I'm going to collect, if I'm a Spider-Man fan, right? And I know this is not DC and Bob Wayne, but if I'm a Spider-Man fan and or Flashpoint, we can even do that. And let's stick with Spider-Man. If I'm a Spider-Man fan and if I want to get the entire Spider-Man experience, right? I am taking money away from this month's Fear Itself book that I could be reading and enjoying. And instead, I'm going to be buying all the Spider-Man, Spider-Island tie-ins.
Well, I mean, let's going back to DC for a second. I see what you're saying, though. Everything they launched in the second month were miniseries. Same thing, I think, in that third month.
Yeah.
Okay. So I get that they're not adding ongoings, and I appreciate that. But that means everything, the Huntress series, the Penguin series, the Shade series, all of those have built-in endpoints.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter how brilliant they are, 6 issues, 12 issues later, boom, that's it, they're done. Now they could roll into another one, but it's transient sales.
Right.
And when I had posed the question to Bob Wayne in response to the, he's trying to make it as hard as possible to drop stuff, are you going to cut back on the monthlies, or the miniseries, I mean, and he's like, well, if somebody comes and they've got a brilliant idea and we don't think it would sustain long-term or whatever, if it justifies it, we'll do it. Okay, that makes sense. I certainly wouldn't want them to say, no more miniseries. There are some things that is the right format for.
Mm-hmm.
But I question if it's the right format for so many things. You know what I mean? And is this Legion Secret Origin series we're going to get, is this Hunter series, is this Penguin series, does it really meet whatever that imaginary threshold we all have in our minds versus what they at DC have? Does it really measure up or not? Maybe it will, maybe it won't. I don't know. But those are going to, in some people's mind, be seen as expendable or ancillary titles that they could easily skip because they quote-unquote don't matter in some respect.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be very interesting to see if the new DC Universe maintains cohesion of continuity within just the batch of the 52 number ones plus going forward, or if they play fast and loose like they did after Crisis because things got confusing. And people say, well, you know, if they don't think it matters, why should I?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, DC has a definite opportunity here both to succeed and to fail. I hope they succeed.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I hope they succeed. Yeah.
I hope they get people so excited about these things that when we're here next year talking about sales on the trades near, you know, second half of the year and stuff, that we're seeing a lot stronger sales.
Mm-hmm.
That people are saying, wow, you know, I loved the Action Comics opening story so much, I want it in that hardcover too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or what have you. We'll see how that goes.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
it's got my son interested, that's for sure. You know, he's going nuts that this is like number one, number two, number three, number four, you know, what's coming out and everything.
Cool.
So he is, and he's 11, you know, wait till in 4 years from now, you know, time flies, John, you know that. So,
Oh yeah.
You know, new generation of readers, which is good.
Yeah. Well, so hopefully it clicks and, not only that new generation, but that new digital audience with the new number ones, they'll see that as a jumping on point. Again, this has a lot of potential to really change the numbers we look at every month.
Yeah.
And do it for the better. And I really hope that happens.
Yeah.
So, what do you got coming up on your show these days?
What do I have coming up on my show? Well, not a whole lot. I'll probably touch on a little bit of the new 52. But nothing really set in stone. But I do, I am having the Detroit Fan Fair coming up on September 23rd, 24th, and 25th.
Cool.
When is this going to air? Before or after that?
You know? After.
Okay, after. Okay, so I will have been at
you
the
will
Detroit
have been.
Fan Fair. And we are having we had a great panel.
Thank you for telling me how that will have been in the future. That's the problem with needing to record this so I have time to edit them before we get
exactly.
them up for the listeners.
Yeah, you don't have to edit that. So we had a panel of appearing to schedule was myself, Mike Pfeiffer from Most People Are DJs, Zach Krusi from formerly of DCBS and of the Distinguished Comic Book Podcast, and also the Mystery Solved webcomic. Derek Coward is going to be on there from Comic Book Noise, Stevie D from Comic Book Queers, and Decapitated Dan, among many things from comic related. So it is going to be a really fun, or it was a really fun panel. And so I get to moderate it too. So We'll see how that goes. So it'll be fun, you know.
What was the thing that Stephen Colbert did for the presidential debate that was airing the night he was going to do preview tomorrow's coverage of
the
tiger, the blood? Oh, my God. Yeah.
Exactly. But what else besides that? Nothing really, but I'm going to Disney World at the end of the month. So
cool. It should be fun.
Disney. Yay.
Get to see all the Marvel stuff now.
I'm not going to Islands of Adventure, unfortunately.
You'll see whatever they've got, though. It's Orlando, right?
I'm going to Orlando. I'm going to go to Magic Kingdom, Epcot, and what else? The other movie place.
MGM.
I'm going to those three.
Cool.
So
I did that ages ago and really enjoyed it.
Yeah, good time. What about you? What's coming up on your show?
Let's see. All kinds of stuff. Bob and I are in the middle of doing reviews of all of the new 52 stuff. So between the time we have recorded this and the time this airs, I will have read and reviewed another 13 DC comics. And have gotten ready to review the next batch. We did the first week, and that I thought went pretty well. There were a couple of things that really clicked with me, a couple that really clicked with Bob's. They were different ones, as expected. One or two, it was, if I had been asked just from the initial solicit how I thought I would rate it and how Bob would rate it for one particular title, I would have flipped the numbers.
Yeah.
One worked better for me than for Bob, and there are a few that were the other way.
What's your favorite title so far?
Man, that's a tough call. Right now, I would have to say the three out of the first week that really clicked with me.
Yeah, first week.
Static, but I love the character.
Mm-hmm.
To me, he's the modern-day Spider-Man.
He is, right.
Anyone who's not really in love with that character needs to go read the original run.
I should do that. Because I wasn't that floored with it.
Oh, Dwayne McDuffie knocked it out of the park. I mean, the new number one is great if you're familiar with the character, and I'll totally concede that. Did it really set up the character? I thought it did for his current status quo, but not as if the character had never been seen.
Right.
So between the original run, I hadn't watched all the cartoon, but enough.
Okay, I've got a question. Did he debut as a cartoon, or did he debut in a comic?
He debuted as part of the Milestone characters, Milestone Comics, back in the day.
Okay.
And it's a urban teen hero who's a nerd, who's really smart with the science, and realizes he can outthink his opponents using his powers smarter, and he quips a lot. If that's not a definition of Spider-Man to a degree, I don't know what is, you know?
Right.
But it's not Spider-Man. That's what I love. So that one I went in expecting to like, and I did. I really enjoyed the new Green Arrow. I thought that was really well done. Dan Jurgens' art, though, George Perez inks, hard to go wrong with that.
Mm.
I also really enjoyed the Justice League International. It had a couple of really cool moments. So I was very happy with that. I didn't hate any of them. The one that really came closest to completely turning me off and saying, I'm done with this title, was actually Detective Comics, and I did not expect that. I think they misrated that book. It should have been a teen plus, not a teen. I thought there were a couple places in the beginning and ending kind of framing sequence that were disgusting.
Yeah.
But that's just hitting the wrong button for me. A lot of other people are not going to have any problem with that, and that's fine.
Right.
But this is how if I had read that getting into comics as a kid, I would not be a Batman fan.
Right, right.
It's like, if you're going to do that, forget it. But there have been a number of things DC has done over the years that have if I had read it then versus reading it now as an adult, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, I think they've been doing a good job. The part that's been getting me is Animal Man, Swamp Thing, I thought were good, but nothing that I hadn't seen before back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
So while I am liking some of these, after a relaunch with a fresh, clean slate, they're not going to home run, but they're not knocking it out of the park, or they're doing a triple, you know, whatever sports metaphor you want to put in there. I am expecting them, unrealistically so, and I will admit that, to have every book come out and just knock that ball into orbit.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't do that every time. I know that. But they've cut the cord on the continuity to a degree. They've thrown everything into a tailspin as to, well, how much of what happened before matters, if any, etc.
Mm-hmm.
That they need to get me invested in this new universe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fact that Superman looks different. Sure, it's just a costume change. What's the big deal? It is no big deal. but it's a visual reminder. This is not the Superman I've been reading for the last 30 years.
Right.
It's not the Superman that was the basis for Lois and Clark, for Smallville, for the animated series, for the movies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not to say it's a radically different character. I don't know yet. So they have me on the fence on some of this. And it's going to be interesting going through the rest of the 52, what clicks, what doesn't, what they've changed, what they've improved, what they haven't. So, like I said, it's going to be fun stuff. So we're going to be doing that. That gives us a full slate of three episodes every week for the next, actually quite a few weeks. Which is why instead of doing the Mayo Report comics and trade within the same week, I just slotted them onto, you know, subsequent Wednesdays. So we've got the Fridays every week for 4 weeks as when we do these publisher spotlights on DC.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's a good opportune time to do something like that for Marvel or some of these other publishers, we might do that. But this is really a rare opportunity where they've gone and, you know, clean slated everything at a publisher to where there's a need to go talk about all of these items. It's going to make picking stuff for the weekly comic spotlight going forward challenging because we'll have to go hit a lot of these miniseries or talk about a third issue when we already talked about the first or whatever. But, you know, we'll see how that goes.
Mm.
But so that's a lot of what we've got going on right now. So
cool.
Anything else? Or does that pretty much do it?
No, I think that'll do it, man. Until next month, eh?
Cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themayoreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you're in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. If you're a resident of some other space-time continuum, please limit any actions you may take to that alternate reality. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes to 2 decimal places, and therefore there's a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. For months in which no issue of Batman or Detective shipped, Batman: The Battle for the Cowl was used instead. The title used as the key title is irrelevant. If you do not understand why or do not believe this, please consider taking a refresher course on basic algebra. Math is fun, but only if you understand it. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Sell-through information is not currently available, and we limit our reporting to the available information. If, however, you enjoy fiction, please listen to this preview spotlight for our recommendations of upcoming comic books. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications that at least one retailer may have excessive amounts of empty shelf space with dust that needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold to Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month in question. The list of the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to the retailers for the month in question. More than 300 graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 100, 50, 25, or as few as 10 items on the list. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as we know, has not been invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic book, graphic novel, or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 300 graphic novels and collected edition lists are included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. For some strange reason, Diamond doesn't report on sales through competing distributors. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any item sold outside of Diamond's comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. We limit this report to the available data. If more data becomes available, we'd be happy to include it. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for. No amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is inapplicable in the alternate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there. I have neither the time nor the interest in engaging in pointless debates in this hypothetical reality. There are no guarantees of accuracy, reliability, completeness, or timeliness of any of the information given in the course of this discussion. We are human, and sometimes we make mistakes. We appreciate your understanding in this area. Any statements that may contain projections or other predictions about future events should be viewed as opinions that are subject to change as new information becomes available. Actual events may unfold in unexpected ways. As Doc Brown once said, the future is what you make of it. If any statements are contradicted or contested, the participants of the discussion may disavow any knowledge of those statements.